This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. If you like to eat, then you should be a big fan of bees, butterflies, and other pollinators. But bees and other critters that help these plants bloom are in trouble. They've seen the number of beehives crash across the country, and if we lose many more, it could cause a food production crisis. Now, the White House is taking action, but the pesticide that could be killing the bees is still going to be on the market. So what is happening to our bees? What is the president's plan, and what can we all do to help these pollinators survive? Call in, tell us what you think. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. Our guest this half hour, Walter Schumacher. He is the director, the head of the Central Texas Bee Rescue, a nonprofit. And Nancy Morin, she is a scientist at UT Austin who is working on figuring out why these pollinators are dying. And we're also joined by Shalini Jha. She's a professor of integrative biology at UT Austin. Welcome to The Source, all of y'all.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Walter, let me ask you, tell me about this nonprofit that you have, Central Texas Bee Rescue.
Right. Well, that's the branch that actually does the removals and the relocation. American Honeybee Protection Agency is our 501c3. And what we do in a statewide effort is we go places and remove honeybees where they're unwanted, and we take them places where they are wanted.
Okay, so like in Austin, they have an ordinance that says you just can't kill bee colonies willy-nilly just because they popped up in a place where you don't like. So so you're called in those instances to try and recover that bee colony if you can, and then put it someplace where people wouldn't mind it.
Right. So what we do once we relocate the bees and rehabilitate them is we take them to very high-profile places. Like here in San Antonio, we have bees on the roof of the colonnade, Omni Colonnade, and in Austin, we have bees on the roof of GSD&M. In Dallas, we have bees on the roof of Central Market.
Okay, so Nancy Morin, you're over at UT Austin. You're working on figuring out why we're having this issue with bees. So how bad is it?
So my work is on the microbial component of bee health, the bacteria, the viruses, the fungi that can affect whether bees live and die. And so we're really trying to understand this at a fundamental level, and that's really where my focus is. But I have kept up over the last few years with the data on bee health. And, you know, basically there is a lot of colony mortality. The most recent data shows that both overwintering mortality is high, but also mortality of hives during the season, which is something that's a little bit surprising because that's when bees should be thriving and feeding. But they die from really unknown causes throughout the season. And so finding out what those causes are is really an effort that a lot of people are contributing to across the country, and people at universities, USDA, and different institutions.
Now, Shalini Jha, you're a professor of integrative biology at UT Austin. Is that people are saying that it's hard to point to one single factor that could be hurting the bees, that we have to look at the matrix of factors that they live in. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. As Nancy mentioned, you know, there's still a lot of discussion about what particular factors are having the most effect on different bee species. But it's pretty clear that habitat loss, specifically habitat that's important for nesting and for their food resources, is playing some role. There appears to be some role of pests or pathogens for these bees, as well as potential exposure to pesticides. So my work is a little bit more oriented towards native bees or wild bees, but we see that some of the drivers of decline are related between both honeybees and native bees.
So, Nancy Morin, the issues that are impacting the bees, we've heard a lot about, I think it's the neonicotinoids, nicotine, what is that?
Neonicotinoids.
Neonicotinoids.
Yeah.
And it's a class of widely used insecticides. They're used because They don't affect our own nervous systems. You know, mammals and humans and other mammals are little affected, but they do affect arthropods, including all insects. And these have been used in ways that were designed to limit exposure to bees. And so, there, you know, all along we have realized that we don't want to target bees and other beneficial arthropods. And so these insecticides are supposed to be applied at levels and in ways that will not impact pollinators so much. But there's been a bunch of recent studies that suggest that even at the very low doses of exposure that bees are getting, that there are major effects. And really this is because bees are, it's a little more complicated. A bee is part of, especially a honeybee in particular, is part of a social group. They live in colonies. They have very highly sophisticated behaviors and ways of interacting, finding their way around the landscape, finding their way back to the hive. And so they're, not only do they have to stay alive, but they have to behave normally. And it turns out that even very small amounts of these insecticides seem to disrupt the behavior of colonies. Even though the bees appear healthy in some ways, they're not behaving properly, and this causes the colonies to have problems. And at this point, there's been quite a few studies done in Europe and in the U.S. Showing that even very small doses are having these effects on honeybees and also on bumblebees, which also live in colonies.
Yeah, we have to remember there are many thousands of different types of bees. We talk about honeybees because that's something that we're very familiar with. They're, I guess, the poster child for bees, but there's native bees also to be considered. But Shalini, is this a global problem?
Yeah, there is, especially if we are thinking about bees that we have been studying for many years. For example, bumblebees, we see that they're declining across the globe. Now, part of the challenge with understanding what's happening with native bees is that we haven't necessarily been tracking their populations up until recently, but we know that in the U.S., for example, there are four bumblebee species that we believe are in decline. One species, which hasn't been seen frequently for the past couple of years, Bombus franklini. And there are bees in bumblebees in Europe as well that we know have been declining in terms of abundance. It's very likely that other native bees are also experiencing some decline, but again, we're missing some data on that front. But as I mentioned earlier, and as Nancy has been discussing, some of the factors that could be causing this decline include things like pesticide exposure, as well as habitat loss and pathogens.
Okay, we're going to talk more about those when we come back. Our topic is bees, butterflies. We want to talk about the butterflies, the monarchs, also very important. Other pollinators that we have in our ecosystem, they're in trouble, and we need these guys in order to provide the food that we get from the store. Without them, we are in trouble as well. What do you think we should do? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. There is concern about the alarming decline of honeybees and other pollinators in the United States. The Obama administration has released a national strategy to promote the health of honeybees and those pollinators. People are wondering if it's going to be enough, and why aren't we taking another look at maybe trying to limit the use of pesticides, which looks like to be a smoking gun in regards to some of these colony collapse disorder issues. We're joined in the studio with Walter Schumacher. He is a guy who runs a bee rescue outfit. It's a nonprofit. If you have a bee colony on a beehive on your property and you want to get rid of it, Walter is the guy. He can come down. He can take care of that. And he won't kill the bees. He will relocate them. Is that right, Walter?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. And also, we're joined by Nancy Moran. She is a scientist at UT Austin. She's working on trying to figure out why these pollinators are dying. And Shalini Jha is a professor of integrative biology at UT Austin. She's also working on this issue. Let's get to some of our callers. If you want to join in, the number is 210-614-8980. And Daniel has called in. Daniel, hi. Welcome to The Source.
Hi. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. You're great.
One thing I wanted to put a word in is for the role that our landscaping choices make as far as providing habitat for our pollinators. I'm here in San Antonio looking at a landscape with red-tipped phytinia and crepe myrtle and sago palm, and none of these commonly used landscape plants provide any type of benefit for our native wildlife as far as pollinators go. And I think that we're creating landscapes that are really devoid of much value for pollinators, and that's part of this puzzle that needs to be addressed. There's a lot of resources out there for people who are interested in planting native plants. The Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center is one of them. And I think that's a big thing that people can do right at home as far as addressing this problem that we're facing.
Okay, Daniel, thank you for calling that information in. We appreciate it. So, Walter, what do you think about that? As you help these bees out and relocate them, are you putting them in places where there's enough food for them?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the things that we do we do a lot of work on top of roofs. So we do the rooftop work, and with each place we place bees on a rooftop, like at the Omni, we also bring in a bunch of fruits and vegetables, not only for the place to eat, but for the bees to eat as well.
So as they pollinate, they need the nectar and the pollen for their protein and carbohydrates in order to make sure that they bring it back to the hive, and they process that into honey and wax and all sorts of other good things.
Correct. Yeah, that's how it's the building blocks. So the sap, the pollen, the nectar, they're all the building blocks of the beehive, and that's one of the problems that the bees face, because when they're using systemic pesticides to take care of the pest locally, nationally, the bee brings all of these things back, and they're low-level toxins that they then incorporate into their beehive, and that beehive off-gasses. So
Shalini Jha, what more can people do in regards to habitat? I mean, Barack Obama is talking about creating a reserve or something for them?
Yeah, so I think, Daniel brought up some really great points. I think, one of the key things in terms of building that sort of habitat in your backyard or promoting it in facilities, some of the Pollinator Health Task Force recommendations that came out this past week were actually invoking or encouraging federal properties, highways, railroad tracks, many of these sort of public land spaces to be gardened in such a way so that they include these native pollinator-friendly plants. So what Daniel mentioned, the fact that they're native plants is really important. The other issue that pollinators need, of course, is pollen and nectar, and so they need these resources for themselves and for their offspring, but they need them across the flowering season, not just at one period in time. So we often encourage gardeners to incorporate a lot of flowering diversity in their native plant selection so that they can have resources for pollinators across the entire season, and that makes sure that pollinators aren't in a feast and famine situation where they only have resources for these short periods of time.
So a big meadow of San Augustine grass, that looks like a desert to a bee.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, let me get another caller on the air. Hugh wants to join in. Hugh, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on the previous thing. I understand these nicotinoids are applied pretty much always to seeds, mm-hmm. and then as the plants grow, the stuff is taken up into the plant. And the problem is that particularly big box stores are supplying plants that have been treated this way, and in some cases they're supplying plants advertised as for bee habitat.
Okay, so Nancy, is that correct?
I don't know exactly what the data are on the plants from these stores. I'm not completely up on that, so I don't want to feel sure, but that certainly would be a concern that someone could buy a plant that they think is good for bees and it has flowers that could be good for bees, but it actually contains these insecticides. So getting, as Shalini and Daniel pointed out earlier, buying native plants from places that are not using insecticides on them would certainly be preferable as a way of attracting and supporting pollinators in someone's yard.
So Walter Schumacher, are you familiar with, you know, is that happening? You go to a big box store, you buy, you know, your posies, and they're basically poison for the bees.
Right. Again, we've been speaking of that. I think Lowe's is the only place that guarantees that they have rooted plants that are not sprayed with the neonics. So I think Lowe's is one of the only places that's come forward and said that we won't allow these things in our store. But that is the problem. Again, these poisons act systemically. They come up through the plant, and their nectar and their saps and their pollens are toxins to these bees. And the studies are something like 95% of all corn are sprayed with this. And then the other thing isn't just that. It's that chemicals are sprayed onto store-bought plants to keep them in bloom longer. And that in bloom longer, those toxins, those chemicals also create bad reactions with honeybees.
So, but when you buy seeds at the store, maybe you're going to do your backyard garden, are they treated with this type of stuff?
I think the studies are that something like 90% of all seeds right now are coated with neonicotinoid dusts.
Okay, and so they don't have to be labeled. Is there any sort of effort to have these products labeled that way? Anybody got any information on that?
Yeah, I don't know for sure. I know if you bought seeds at Ladybird Wildflower Center of native plants, they would not be sprayed and would be very nice things to plant in your yard for the purpose of supporting bees.
You know, because go ahead.
Likewise, I think if you buy from organically grown plants or seeds derived from organically grown plants, you're probably going to avoid that as well.
Okay, let's get another caller on the air. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join in. Joe has called in. Joe, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon. Hey, listen, I have a comment. I think one of the reasons that the bee population is also declining is people are actually afraid to get stung. And if they find a mount anywhere near their house or in their yard, I've seen some beehives take a colony into a construction work truck. And I've seen people pour gas all over the mount, and these poor bees just die. And it just breaks my heart that they do that when it's so easy just to remove them, but they're just afraid of the bees being there.
Okay. And so we got to make people aware of the do's and don'ts of hanging out with bees. And so, Walter, tell us about that. I mean, have you seen instances like that where people overreact to bees?
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons we started. In America, it's legal everywhere except for the city of Austin, Texas, to spray chemicals or to kill honeybees without cause. Our organization in Austin helped write a resolution, and now it's an ordinance where they changed one simple word from exterminate to relocate. So without cause, you can relocate the honeybees, and with cause, you could exterminate them. But first, you would have to find somebody that would have to say that these are hazardous to society.
So, like a very aggressive colony that's right, been Africanized.
Right. And so here's the deal. So across America, you have a minimum of 100,000 beehives that are being exterminated each and every year. And the only place it's not legal to do that is, again, in Austin, Texas.
Okay, and you're working on trying to get that ordinance changed in San Antonio.
Right, and Houston and Dallas, Fort Worth as well.
So, Nancy Moran, let me ask you, the consumer, the home guy who wants to put a hive in his backyard, that's not going to be enough to deal with this, is it?
Well, it certainly will increase the pollination of plants in that immediate vicinity, you know. So adding a lot more city dwellers are starting to keep bees, and often it works out wonderfully. For one thing, they get a lot of enjoyment out of it. It's just a wonderful world.
And free honey.
Looking at bee colonies. Understand you get honey and you get to deal with the bees, and it's interesting for kids to learn all about biology. So there's a lot of great benefits. It also will increase pollination of, you know, local fruit trees or vegetables that people might have growing. But the real problem is sort of on a nationwide scale. The large beekeepers who are providing pollination for, you know, major crop production in agriculture are experiencing very high losses of colonies, and So this is a problem for them. It's an economic problem. And, I mean, obviously, honeybees are not going to go extinct, right? They're a domesticated species. They're very widespread, but it's problematic that the colonies are not doing well, and it's problematic for the production of lots of different food crops. So figuring out what that's about, it's really an agricultural problem to a large degree.
Right. So we have to figure out what's killing off the hives and reverse the trend so that we can have an ample enough supply of the hives to effectively provide the food that we need to feed a hungry nation. And so, Shalini Jha, how far are we from making that happen?
That's a great question. I mean, I think to follow up on Nancy's point, I think it is, in fact, an agricultural problem, and it's also a problem, obviously, in agricultural areas that are in cities, such as urban gardens. But I think one of the real strategies going forward is to think about how we can, you know, manage our agricultural landscapes so that they promote pollinator health. And so, you know, we've talked about reducing pesticide exposure, but also promoting food resources in these agricultural habitats, you know, for many crops. The style of management has really changed in the last couple of decades to a very intensive, not very biodiversity-friendly habitat. And when you lose out on that diversity in flowering crops and nesting habitat, then pollinators also lose out on food options and nutritious food options. So it's really a holistic approach I think we need to take to agriculture, where we incorporate some of these basic needs that were part of our traditional agricultural
system. Sure, but we're going to need effective leadership in that area to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And so, Walter Schumacher, real quickly, how do people track you down if they've got a bee situation and they want you to rescue them?
You can reach us at info@ahbpa.org.
Okay, we'll also have that link on our website at tpr.org. This is The Source on KSTX. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the heroin epidemic in America. Stay tuned.